Welcome to the fourth season of Version 20 Podcast, where I, Bobby Stevens, am your host with a new episode every Wednesday. If you are a serious fan of true crime and love listening to podcasts, but don't want all that small talk, you've come to the right place. We get right to the facts. Murder 20 episodes are concise and complete in 20 minutes. Less talk and more true crime. Be sure to like, share, and follow us to learn about upcoming episodes every Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's get to this week's episode. This episode contains graphic content that some listeners may find disturbing. Please listen at your own discretion. Youngstown, Ohio, in the Midwest, is an hour south of Cleveland and is home to Youngstown State University. Today, Youngstown includes hundreds of acres with parks and lakes to explore. But when it comes to crime, its statistics stand out. Ohio's crime rate is average compared to other states. However, in Youngstown, the crime rate is double. Back in the 1960s, the city became known as Murder Town, USA, and was known for its car bombs that became so frequent they were called the Youngstown Tune-Up. For decades, organized crime had a hold on Youngstown. In 2006, it was ranked the 9th most dangerous city in the United States. Today, it is home to 3 major adult correctional facilities, including the Ohio State Penitentiary. But none of this was on the mind of young Shannon Graves. Youngstown was home to her and her family. Shannon had a heart of gold and doted on her younger brother, AJ, and her dog, Molly. Shannon didn't meet her older half-sister, Debbie, until she was 6. At their first meeting, Shannon ran up to her and wrapped her arms around her waist. That sealed their relationship, and they became inseparable. Small in stature, less than 5 feet tall, and barely 100 pounds, Shannon was pretty, with long dark hair, brown eyes, and a big personality. WKBN News reported that her sister described her as spunky, a pit bull in a chihuahua's body, and that Shannon took care of those around her. To her many friends, Shannon was known as Star. Shannon never went anywhere without her cell phone, and her friends knew they could always count on their Star if they needed help. When one of Shannon's friends was experiencing a serious breakdown, she flew to Las Vegas and stayed with her for a few months until she was back on her feet. But even with all her good friends, Shannon was drawn to those in the dodgy underworld and hung out with a rough crowd. In spring 2016, she met Arturo Novoa, a small-time drug dealer who operated out of his apartment. Shannon had a soft spot for Arturo, and by September, they'd moved in together. But their relationship was turbulent, and Arturo was physically violent. Shannon received her cosmetology license and was excited to start a new career. In November, she celebrated her birthday. A month later, Arturo and Shannon broke up, and he moved in with Katrina Layton. But a week later, Arturo moved back in with Shannon. Katrina was jealous. Shannon's life was busy and full, and she sometimes lost touch with her family for a period of time. But come Christmas, she made sure to connect with them. Then, they didn't hear from her for the next few months. Her relationship with Arturo continued to be volatile. And on February 24, 2017, Arturo's violence escalated into the realm of the unthinkable. Court records revealed that Katrina was at their home when Arturo attacked Shannon with a hammer in the bathroom and bludgeoned her to death. Shannon died at 28. Arturo shaved her head and wrapped her body in garbage bags, while Katrina used her cell phone to search for 55-gallon totes and sulfuric acid. Then he and Katrina loaded Shannon's body into the trunk of Shannon's car and drove her to Katrina's home. Arturo then enlisted the help of his friend Andrew Herman and his wife, Michelle Eilenfeld. Andrew provided a machete, and the two men dismembered Shannon's body in the garage and stored them in the plastic totes. Afterwards, they cleaned the garage. Arturo drove the totes back to his home and placed them in the freezer. Keeping her body on ice gave Arturo time to think about how he could dispose of it. He knew throwing her into one of the local lakes was risky, because at some point, she would float to the surface, and police would want to talk to him. A week after the murder, Arturo called a friend, asking to have a bonfire at his house. He was looking for a place to burn Shannon's personal belongings, including her clothes, shoes, papers, hair, and a bracelet with her name engraved on it. His friend watched as Arturo and Katrina removed items from bags and totes and put them into the fire. In their zest to get rid of the evidence, they underestimated the fire, and when the flames grew too high, the fire department showed up to investigate. But they did not notice what was in the fire pit. The next day, Arturo's friend was curious about the items that they saw going into the fire and dug through the ashes. They found Shannon's bracelet and retrieved it. Katrina and her two children, ages 10 and 13, moved in with Arturo. Katrina was madly in love with him. She took care of Molly, Shannon's dog, and used Shannon's identification and began driving her car. It was as if she stepped into Shannon's life and assumed her identity. Arturo and Katrina ordered 12 gallons of sulfuric acid online from Walmart using the name Chicken Man. On March 11th, when they went to the store to pick it up, they discovered that by providing a false name, they'd have to show identification. Katrina provided hers and used her credit card to pay. Back at the house, the couple poured all 12 gallons of acid into one of the totes, attempting to dissolve Shannon's head and torso. What was left of her skull was placed in the freezer, along with her extremities, where they remained for months. Meanwhile, Shannon's family became concerned that they hadn't heard from her. They found out from her friends that she'd been seen with Arturo in February, and when they asked him repeatedly where she was, he told them that Shannon had moved to Cleveland with another man, then on to Columbus with a second man. But when months went by and Shannon hadn't contacted her family, they were suspicious. Although Shannon had periodically disappeared from their lives, it was unusual for her to be a no-show for her sister's birthday in March. And when Easter rolled around, their concern deepened. On June 22nd, Shannon's sister Debbie filed a missing persons report with the Youngstown police. Her family knew something had happened to Shannon. She wouldn't go anywhere without her dog, cell phone, or her car, and all had been left behind. When Debbie started investigating on her own, Arturo got wind of it and was concerned that police would show up and search his home. He needed to find a new place for the freezer. So Katrina rented a bottom floor apartment in a house. Arturo purchased a new freezer at Walmart and took it to the new apartment. Then he removed the remainder of Shannon's body from the old freezer and placed it in the trunk of Shannon's car, took it to the apartment, and placed it in the new freezer. But when the landlord noticed that no one had actually moved into the apartment, he contacted Katrina to ask why. Police investigating Shannon's disappearance executed a search warrant for the home she shared with Arturo. He was nervous. He called up his friend Kenneth in nearby Campbell and told him the electricity was off at his home and asked him for a favor. Could he store his freezer full of meat in his basement? In July, the Ohio Attorney General's office posted Shannon as a missing person. While they generally post only missing children, their website makes an exception for adults when police or family members are concerned that they are in danger. A few weeks later, Kenneth's wife needed some meat for a spaghetti sauce she was making, and Kenneth thought about the meat in Arturo's freezer. He noticed that a lock had been installed, but it was upside down and easily opened. He didn't see the harm in borrowing some meat. But when he opened the freezer, he got the shock of a lifetime and contacted police. On Sunday, July 31st, police arrested Arturo and Katrina. Both were held on a $1 million bond. 8 weeks later, Arturo was charged with 48 counts, including murder, aggravated murder, tampering with evidence, abuse of a corpse, grand theft of a motor vehicle, and drug trafficking. Police interviewed Katrina, and she provided some details into Shannon's murder. However, she omitted many details to protect Arturo. With the information she did provide, they were able to execute 16 search warrants. Katrina agreed to testify against Arturo and reached a plea deal, in which she was released from jail on probation with time served. Meanwhile, Shannon's sister Debbie was convinced Arturo and Katrina had help, that they didn't commit these atrocities on their own. Investigators wouldn't listen. But that changed a year later, when the assistant prosecutor looked into Arturo's phone calls that he made while he was in jail. And although Arturo was careful about what he talked about, he wasn't careful about who he talked to. As we know, phone calls inside jail or prison are recorded, and there is no expectation of privacy. While listening to recordings of Arturo's calls, the prosecution learned about several old cell phones that had been dumped at the curb outside Shannon's apartment. They managed to retrieve the phones and analyze them. The evidence they found pointed them towards Andrew and Michelle. Investigators also discovered that Katrina had talked to Arturo a total of 37 times, and that went against her plea deal. So prosecutors revoked her deal, and she was returned to jail. Arturo's friend, whose property they used for the bonfire, cooperated with investigators and provided Shannon's bracelet. When Michelle heard that they would be a witness, she sent them a threatening message. On Friday, August 30th, 2018, 15 months after Shannon's murder, Andrew and Michelle were arrested. Andrew was charged with 14 counts, including engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity, tampering with evidence, and abuse of a corpse. Michelle was charged with 4 counts, including engaging in a pattern of corrupt activity, obstruction of justice, and intimidation. On June 24, 2019, almost 2.5 years after her murder. Prosecutors presented the cell phone evidence, along with the social media messages they'd retrieved, and got a re-indictment against Arturo. Faced with the new evidence, he changed his plea to guilty. Arturo agreed to a plea bargain. In exchange for pleading guilty to 43 counts, the state of Ohio agreed to dismiss 5 of the charges. He was sentenced to 48 years plus 1 month. In January 2020, Katrina was smiling as she was led into court. She pled guilty to 4 counts, including tampering with evidence, obstruction of justice, and abuse of a corpse. The Vindicator News reported that in handing down her 18-year sentence, the judge said, "These were sinister acts. They were disgusting. They were immoral and were beyond comprehension. I can't get over how horrendous these facts were." A month later, Michelle, who had admitted lying to investigators, was sentenced to 2.5 years. She had already spent 2 years behind bars and would serve another 6 months. Another month went by. It was March 2020, and Andrew was the last of the 4 to be sentenced. He pled guilty to 4 counts, including tampering with evidence and abuse of a corpse. He was sentenced to 12 years in prison. 3 years after Shannon's murder, investigators hadn't given up trying to locate the rest of her remains to bring peace to her family. Shannon's sister Debbie visits her grave often and spray paints a large pink heart next to her gravestone. Pink was Shannon's favorite color. Arturo appealed his case, requesting to take his guilty plea back. In 2023, it was denied. Thanks for listening to Murder in 20 with less talk and more true crime. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday for the episode of Beth Carter and Charles Allen Carr. Sharing a glass of wine on the back deck, the sun warmed their faces. That night below deck, the gentle rocking of the boat lulled them to sleep. In the darkness, Mike and Rob broke in, then slipped below deck. If you're dying to hear more, past episodes of Murder in 20 are available for free at murderin20.com and on all major podcast platforms. We love what we do and are dying to continue. If you enjoy listening to Murder in 20 every week, we'd be eternally grateful for your support by visiting Murder in 20 at Patreon, PayPal, or murderin20.com. We'd like to acknowledge Verbal Planet for use of their music, sound effects from Vaseline Studios and Quick Sounds, and our many editorial sources who are listed on our website. Be sure to like, share, and follow us to learn about upcoming episodes every Wednesday. Stay safe, sleep with the lights on, and don't play with strangers.